Gee, what a great afternoon. Surrounded today by the ladies of Pet Chat, or most of them, Cheryl Shaw and Dr. Fiona. Good afternoon.
Not Dr. Fiona, not today.
No.
It's Dr. been a while,
Kimberly, since we've had you.
It has been a few weeks, yes.
And it's been a long day, strangely enough. Anyway, we're lucky this is not live and we're pre-recording on this. We can start again, can't we?
Sure, we can give it a try.
All right. Cheryl, you've got a topic, I'm sure. You've got a brooch.
Yes. What do you think this might be?
Is that a snake?
It is, and I loathe snakes. I am so scared of them. But a little bit of a backstory. Yesterday I was having a morning tea, and I looked out into the conservatorium, from the conservatorium into our pool, and there was a snake doing some laps.
In the pool?
In the pool.
Oh, fun.
Well, it's get fit season.
Oh, so I thought we might have some snake awareness today.
Sounds pretty good. And Kimberly, I know you'll be ready to answer those questions as well.
Yeah, hit me with them.
But even the snake ones?
Sure. I actually see quite a few snakes, and I like snakes.
Oh, yep. Kimberly.
Oh, this is going to be great later on. All right, for Pet Chat on 2NURFM 103.7. Good afternoon, Mal at Newcastle. Your cat seems to have a bit to say whenever the TV's on. What's the story, Mal?
Oh, look, he won't let me sit down and relax. If I'm cooking or cleaning or whatever, he's fine, and he'll sit on the floor and all that. But as soon as I start to sit down and watch telly, he just goes berserk and runs around the house and meows his head off, like, really, really loud.
Okay. So he's not circling around your feet.
I can hardly hear you.
Okay. He's not circling around your feet or, like, begging for food at other times. It's just when the television is on?
Yeah. I can hardly hear you, actually.
Hmm.
Oh, well, we can hear you very well.
We can hear you.
I can hardly hear the doctor.
Okay. Well, I guess the things that I'd be thinking about is whether or not there's something about the television itself that he's worried about, the noise, maybe there's some static in the background that he is objecting to. Does he do it when you sit down without the television on, is the question?
Yeah, if I'm talking to someone on the phone, he'll do it.
Yeah, okay, so it's not just related to the television. And how old is this cat?
15 months.
Oh, so he's a nice young kitten. Okay, so, I mean, it's quite possible he's just looking for some playtime and attention, and it might be that you need to have, you know, a little collection of throw toys, things like that, that you can, you know, give him something to do. He might actually be trying to just engage you in some, you know, some play, some chases, those sorts of things, because a young cat like that, you know, is likely to be more behavioral than having a major problem with it. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what I would probably try to do, is to see what you can do to try to entertain him. Maybe if you know that you're going to, you know, have a session sitting down, or where you're going to need to talk to somebody and you need him to be a bit quieter, you could look at feeding him, look at getting a foraging feeding toy, where you might put some dry kibble. There's some where you can get, like, the little stuffed mouse that you put some kibble into and you toss that for them and they go hunting and try to, you know, sort of open up the belly of the mouse and get the food out. Give him a job to do, because a young cat, you know, often needs to have not only his body but his mind entertained. And it sounds like he's sort of taking the opportunity. Oh, hang on. Dad's not busy. I'm going to see if I can get him engaged in some play. So, you know, that's what I would do to start with. As long as he's, you know, sort of behaving normally at other times of the day, it's probably just that, you know, you might be catching him of an evening when he's ready to play. Cats are not strictly nocturnal, but they absolutely have periods of greater activity in the evenings. And early mornings. So, you know, it's probably coinciding with the time you were finishing.
He'll grow out of it.
Yeah, like
I can virtually have conversations with him.
Yeah. He's one of those expressive cats then, probably. So, you might find that if you actively engage with him, even for a short period of time, where you really, you know, engage in some chases, you know, some dangly toys, those sorts of things, that you might find that it helps to settle him even after a short period of play.
Well, I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Pet Chat is what you find yourself in the middle of at the moment. So if you have a question for our team of experts, pet-related, they'll probably even have a crack at, I don't know, wayward hubbies, anything like that.
That's
children,
for you.
Children. You have a crack at kids too?
Yeah, parenting is a little bit like training dogs. I'm in discussions with psychologist these days with, you know, about how to better parent my wayward child. Or she's not wayward. But we're all learning. Yeah. Anyway, and the last conversation we had, he's like, oh, you'll be really good at this. It's like dog training.
Mm. Yeah,
I think it is, though. It is. Consistency is important. Yeah.
Positive reinforcement. Yeah. Lots of positive reinforcement.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to have kids real soon. Dr. Kimberly Earle is here. They'll do the pet questions, I promise. But Cheryl Shaw, you are bringing with us those nasty reptiles heading into snake land today.
Oh, look. Stop it. Stop it. No, it's not a topic.
There's one, a big brown down
stop
there.
Stop it. Don't do this to me. Look, snakes aren't a topic that I enjoy, but I thought we really should talk about it because often people think about, you know, the hot summer weather, the snakes being out and about, and you do see them, particularly coming into the uni, laying on the verge, you know, in the leaf litter and things, and they're still around. They're really, really around. And actually, snake numbers are increasing in our cities and suburban areas because of the urban sprawl that we're having with, you know, their habitat being destroyed. And some of our yards, particularly I think mine, are great for snakes because we've got rock gardens, we've got water features, and I've got a bird aviary, and obviously that encourages rats, so the snakes come along. But what we've got to be really mindful of is our pets. Now, if you do notice that there's a snake in the yard, make sure that you take your cat and dog inside. Keep an eye on where the snake is. Most of us carry our phones with us, so it's a good idea to take a picture just in case something has happened. So don't try and think, oh, I'm going to identify this snake or move it. Mark, why did you do that? I just have to tell you, listeners, what it's done to creep me out is just put a snake on the screen in front of me. So I just can't look sideways
now. Well, I'll just give you an idea on that snake. Back in October last year, that's a photo on our Facebook page that Kev threw up. That snake is on the footpath, that giant python on the footpath that you'll be walking out of in about half hour from now.
As long as it's not in my car when I start driving and, you know.
So, but that's a diamond python. So they're a native python. They're non-venomous. They're actually very popular as pets. And despite the fact that they can get quite large, they're actually pretty, you know, docile for, you know, for
snakes.
And
I've covered the photo back up now.
Thank you. But I would still have the heart attack, you know, it will just happen.
Yeah.
But for our pets, let's get back on track. Yep. For our pets, it's really important. If you do see a snake in the yard, be careful. Don't go trying to remove it yourself. Call in the snake catcher. I think that's, you know, number one thing to do. But even if you find a snake that you think may be dead, sometimes they're not dead. They can actually lay really stealth and then, you know, your pet might go over to them. And unfortunately, particularly with dogs, they tend to use their muzzle or their nose to nudge things. And if they nudge a snake, they're going to get bitten probably on the muzzle or on the face somewhere. Now, sometimes dogs don't react to a snake bite. Obviously this can happen, that can take about 24 hours from the time a snake bites for symptoms to show up. So regardless, if you think, oh, you know, the snake's out there and it's dead, or my dog has, you know, been playing with it but it seems fine, I really want to stress that it's important to go to the veterinarian straight away. Don't waste time thinking, oh, the dog seems fine. You've got to get there because, Kimberly, they can monitor the dog and things can go wrong very quickly.
They can. They actually, I think my record is a dog who didn't really start showing any clinical symptoms for, it was 3 to 4 days after it was bitten. So what we'll sometimes see is a dog that will have an acute collapse. They might get bitten within 10 minutes. They might have a little sort of episode where they might sort of faint or, you know, sort of vomit once, things like that. And then they seem to be quite normal again. And you sort of think, oh, that was a bit weird, but maybe it was just nerves or excitement or something like that. And unfortunately, it's not. And particularly with our red-bellied black snakes, the effects of that is that it starts to sort of melt their muscles and they start to have coagulopathy, so bleeding problems. And those often don't become apparent for a number of hours, if not a couple days. So absolutely, it's, you know, even if your dog looks fine, if you think they've been bitten, it's definitely worthwhile getting them into the vet. Because the longer that toxin, the poison is in their bloodstream, the harder it can be to turn it around. It doesn't always work that way. It is sometimes about the amount of venom that's been injected. And so sometimes, you know, you get like a very quick bite, but if the snake has had a lot of venom or hasn't used up their venom for a while, they can get a really, really big dose. But yeah, absolutely. Particularly with our red-bellied black snakes, we often will see a delayed response. A little bit less with, you know, some of the tiger snakes, things like that. Brown snakes, they will often have a bit more of a rapid deterioration. But yeah, red-bellied blacks for sure, it's often a delayed response.
Yeah, and another thing is some snakes really do smell. They give off an odour to sort of get their enemies away. So often dogs are attracted to where the snake may have been. So, you know, if you see a dog, you know, sniffing around rock areas or digging in holes, just be really mindful to remove that pet from there. Trying to keep our grasses short as well is really important. Yeah. And, you know, any areas where you store wood for your wood fires, they are just notorious.
That's the classic. Yeah.
So, you know, just be really mindful that they're always around. They're even around at nighttime. It's not just a daytime thing. Mm. Some snakes are around during the night. So, you know, I just wanted to bring that awareness there that snakes are a really big issue for us and we need to make sure that, we're just watching out for our cats and dogs.
All right. And the people as well.
And the people
and
as well.
And the people. Yeah. Really important too. If you do find a dead snake, particularly with our venomous snakes, the venom is stored in the fangs and in the glands. And if you get scratched or pricked with the tooth, so you're trying to dislodge it from something, you can still get envenomated even if the snake is dead. So the head can be detached from the rest of the snake, you can still get envenomated. So just very, very careful handling, please.
All right, so Cheryl, you survived that?
I'm through. I'm done.
Keep in mind, you've got to walk outside back to the car. A lot of leaf litter, a lot of leaf. All right, 4921 6216 to be a part of Pet Chat today. Good afternoon, Catherine from Madawi. Thanks so much for your patience there. And hang on, Catherine, you don't put us on hold, we put you on hold. That's nice hold music. What do you think, ladies?
It is nice hold music.
Yeah. We've missed out.
We'll
anyway,
come back.
She has come back. G'day, Catherine. Thanks for getting back to us there. Your 12-month-old Foxy, what's going on there?
He's a gorgeous nature little fella, and he's got this thing about being on a leash.
Mm-hmm.
I have to sort of fight to get him harness on him to start with, and that's okay once he's settled. And I can hook a leash to him, but as soon as I want to guide him where I need to go, he carries on like a cut snake. And honestly, he throws himself on his back and plays dead.
Yep.
And he just won't move.
Okay.
So I'm just wondering. Now, I know I've got to be patient with him and everything. Oh,
yep.
God, here's another one. I just need a bit of advice on how to coach him into walking with me.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got to...
So I would start by getting him on a leash inside the house. Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Oh, you can hardly hear you.
Okay.
Right.
This microphone seems to be...
Anyway.
Doesn't like you.
Doesn't like me today. I would get him on a leash in the house.
I'm not going to kill him. And I haven't harmed him in any way. Of course, it was just he's got this aversion to being on a leash.
Yeah, so he just needs to get used to it. We need to desensitize to it. Desensitize him to it. So he needs to be, like, taught that it's just a normal part of life, right, being on a leash. So obviously under supervision, I would get that harness on him and I would clip a leash to him. And when you're just at home, just let him initially, if he won't tolerate any pressure on him, I would just let him wear the leash, a decently, not a super light leash, like not a really heavy one. He's just a little dog, but something that's got a little bit of weight. So he just starts to get the feel for the weight of it and just let him wear it while he's around the house. Wear it over to his food dish, wear it to, you know, come and sit with you on the lounge, wear it when he follows you into the bedroom, you know, that sorts of thing. Just let him get used to the weight of it and always positively reinforcing him, particularly when he's being calm. We want to sort of, you know, allow him to be calm and be positive. If he's trotting down the hall, dragging his little leash behind him, you want to be praising him. You want to be bribing him with treats. Good dog. You know, here's your treat for being such a good dog. And then you can start to slowly, you know, start to pick it up and ask him to walk down the hall with you. And when you get to the bedroom, you're going to give him a treat. And when you walk back down towards the lounge room, you're going to give him a treat. We need to create an association with that leash, that leash is associated with good things, treats, entertainment, you know, companionship, those sorts of things. Obviously, we're not leaving leashes on dogs when we're not supervising them in the house. We don't want them to get tangled and strangled and horrible things like that. But we definitely want to do it while he's at home with you and just turn it into something that's really normal. You get up in the morning, you go to the toilet with your harness on, preferably, and then you come in and have your leash on. You wander around the house with your leash on. And then when you do start to take him for walks, you're going to have to do you know, do it in the backyard. So get him to walk across the backyard, because it might be that he at the moment has an aversion to walking because he something scary. You might not have identified it as scary, but to him it might have been scary. It might have been a truck that, you know, drove past, or a car door that slammed, or somebody's, you know, vehicle honked, or another dog barked, and it scared him. And the only thing he remembers is that when that scary thing happened, he was on the leash. So we really need to just desensitize him to it and really recreate a positive association between the leash. So good things will happen when you're on this leash. And that might mean you have to like work on just like 6 steps at a time, give him a reward, see if you can get him to go another 6 steps. If he won't go, don't pull on him, don't drag him, turn him around, walk him back in the other direction. Because it's not so much where we're going, it's about the fact that he's moving in a forward direction that we need to build on, okay?
All right, best of luck with everything, Catherine. More of Pet Chat this afternoon. Dr. Kimberly Earle is here, and the very slithery, slimy, snake-loving Cheryl Shaw.
Oh, just close my eyes.
Well, Kim, you invited this because you actually, so I'm going to talk about snakes today. So.
I know, but I thought it was really important because we do let our guard down sometimes, particularly after summer's finished. We go, oh, good.
Autumn, yeah, there's at least a few more weeks where the snakes will be out and very active, particularly on the warmer days. So,
Yeah, so just always be looking down and ahead, eh? if you'd love to expand your family, maybe a dog or cat of the week, sure, we'll get back into some more home territory here.
Yes.
We'll start with our dog friend today. You can adopt Marley, a 3-year-old wolfhound cross, and a very affectionate type of animal, loves being around people. So again, if you've got a lot of people at home, maybe the dog for your warm and friendly nature, and loves kitties as well, and seems to be a very patient dog. So that's a good start.
Yeah, this is a nice young dog. She's kind of like a scruffy, cute little ugly thing. Cute, but ugly, you know. Anyway, cute.
Wow, you're really, really doing a good job for me.
Okay, well, she's not a pedigree thing, but she's very cute looking. Says she has a giant-sized heart, you know, the wolfhound-sized heart, but she's about the size of a Staffordshire Terrier. So a smaller dog, learning her, you know, manners and things like that, very well-behaved. Good on the lead after being given a little bit of time to calm down because she's a bit excited on the walk to start with. And, you know, obviously training is an ongoing thing. It does say she needs a secure yard with no gaps. Now, I would say that's true for all dogs, and they haven't indicated that she's an escape artist, but smaller dogs, you know, littler holes. So she is not suitable for cats, bunnies, or other small animals. But she is okay with kids, not a chewer or a digger.
Well, put that as the first line, and then you've done the selling job halfway, haven't you?
And it says that, you know, has all the usual things. She's desexed, she's vaccinated, she's had some flea and tick treatment, or flea and worm treatment anyway. She's microchipped, and she's good in the car. So that's always good, because as the dog mother of a dog who's been very car sick in her first few years of life, that's a pain. Anyway, she's good now.
Yeah, look, it seems like Marley's a bit of a winner here.
Yeah, listen, I think, you know, if you've got a family, a growing family, got a bit of space, a bit of time, she's a young dog, so she's going to need a fair bit of exercise still, but it also means she's going to be with you for a good long time.
Cheryl, what about the grooming and maintenance side of things for Marley, for an animal such as this 3-year-old wolfhound cross?
Because it is a wolfhound cross with, you know, it's not going to take a lot of maintenance, lots of bathing. Sometimes the trimming of the eye area where the hair is sort of going up across the eyes, that would be a thing to just be aware of. But not a lot of maintenance, quite an easy dog to look after.
Oh, I'll tell you what, we've done a good job on this, haven't we? We start with, Marley's an ugly dog, but hey, we've got all these other, you know, plot points.
You did pretty well. Cute but ugly.
Ugly. Just a scruffy puppy.
Scruffy puppy.
Yeah, I think that's the animal version of has a wonderful personality, I think.
Face only a mother can love. No. She's not like that.
Really is really nice.
Have a look.
While you're there, maybe a new cat would be something for your household. Badger, 4-year-old, black and white. Male and a little bit shy at first, but so it takes a little bit to come out and feel comfortable once he settles in. And seems like he sort of is that kind of way. Chilled out as well and fine around other cats. They don't seem to faze him. Again, not the household for Badger if you've got kids, so he's just not a fan of the youngsters.
Yeah, so he's a little bit of an older cat, like four. He's not a kitten. And it says he's had a rough past, which may mean that he's, well, it says he's timid. Came into foster care after experiencing a chemical burn to the side of his face. So he's had a little bit of fur off the, looks like the left side of his nose. But he's, you know, healed well. He's ready to go to his forever home. But because of his history, he's a little bit shy. He's not, he's probably a bit, you know, startles a bit when there's small children around. So if you have a multi-cat household and you're thinking of adding to that, that might be a plan, but not with young kids. So,
And Kimberly, he'd need to be inside, wouldn't he, because of his very pink nose?
Yeah, and so he's got no fur covering over that, so he would be at high risk for skin cancer, sun cancer.
A lovely indoor cat.
Yeah, we would always recommend cats be inside anyway because they just live so much longer lives. Much better for them and much better for our wildlife. So
yes, absolutely.
Good times, great music, and just a little bit more of Pet Chat on the way at 2NURFM 103.7. Of course, Cheryl Shaw is here.
Stop it, Cheryl.
Dr. Kimberly, we haven't figured
out which
we haven't figured out which animals like you're afraid of yet, have we?
There's not many that I'm afraid of.
Okay.
I'm cautiously cautious around a lot of animals, but I'm not really afraid of any animals. But I've never been to Africa and been on a safari, you know.
That's true. Rhinos.
See a big rhino or elephant or something come storming at you, that might be different.
Isn't it funny? You think like the big cats, and obviously I don't want to be in front of a lion, a hungry lion either, but then the rhinos do more kill more people than the others.
Yeah, crocodiles. Like I wouldn't like to be somewhere where there's crocodiles. That potentially gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Actually, the other week, for no reason, I looked up how fast south crocodiles come in Australia and got a bit scared.
Scarier than what you think,
Something you have been seeing a bit of at the moment, though.
Yeah, so rat bait. So we were talking about the red-bellied black snakes causing a coagulopathy, and we have had quite a lot of rat bait poisoning coming through the clinic, not just my clinic, but I've talked to colleagues as well. And I think it's something that's really important that people are aware of because everybody knows that rat bait is toxic to animals, but most people aren't aware of how it works. And so a really common scenario is that somebody will call our clinic and they say, my dog just ate rat bait, or my dog ate rat bait yesterday, but he seems fine. Should I bring him in? And the answer to that question is always yes, 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 yes. Because the way that rat bait works is that it causes a coagulopathy. So that means it causes your blood to stop being able to clot. And that's a process that takes a number of days. So we will often not see any clinical signs of rat bait poisoning for 3 to 5 days. And in fact, it can be difficult to test for in the early few days. We will often bring dogs in. We will make them vomit. So the utility of bringing them in straight away is that if we think even that they have had a rat bait exposure, we can make your dog vomit. It's a little harder with cats. We can sometimes make cats vomit, but they're a little bit more stubborn. But we can give them a product to cause them to vomit and evacuate the stomach. If it's been within, you know, about 4 hours, it's probably worthwhile doing that. And then we need to watch for the signs of coagulopathy or bruising, bleeding. And so that's the really important thing. Your dog is not going to look acutely sick. The rat bait, the bait itself isn't going to cause the dog to feel sick until it starts to bleed to death. And so often the first symptoms we'll see is a little bit of bruising, maybe a bit of blood in the whites of the eyes or bruising on the gums. We've had dogs where they've been chewing on a bone and their gums start to bleed more than usual. That can be the first sign. Sometimes you'll, the dog flops onto its back to have a belly rub and you go, oh, gee, you've got some purple splotches there, and that can be a sign of it. But we have really good lab tests these days where we can test them. We need to wait about 3 days, 2 to 3 days, and we can take a sample of blood and say, yes, your dog's clotting factors are all used up, therefore they need to have the antidote. And the antidote, depending on the product, so this is the other hot tip, if you know that your dog has had access and you still have the packet, bring the packet in because it's very, very, very helpful for us to know exactly what kind of rat bait you've laid out. Because some of them require treatment for 3 weeks, some of them require treatment for 6 to 8 weeks, and there is an antidote. So vitamin K, straight up vitamin K tablets is the antidote. Now, should we not be aware that your dog's gotten into rat bait and they present to us bleeding with what we call a bleeding diathesis or a coagulopathy, the treatment is much, much harder. We sometimes have to give blood transfusions, plasma transfusions, injectable vitamin K. They often require, acute ICU care for shock. And, you know, sometimes they're in cardiovascular failure because they've already lost so much blood. It's pooling in the abdomen. It's putting pressure, on the heart, and the heart can't pump because there's no blood left in the circulation and it's actually in the body cavities. So really, really important to be aware of the fact that rat bait is a delayed, what we'd call a delayed toxicity in almost every case. And we've even had recently, we've had a little rabbit that got in contact with some rat bait. So we've had to treat the rabbit. Really, really common for brush-tail possums to get it. Brushies seem to get it more than ringtails do, but people tend to put baits up in the roof and they're, brush-tail possums get into the roof, and then we'll find, someone will bring us a possum and say, this was on the ground outside of my garage. And, sure enough, when we start looking, they're really, really pale, or they've got signs of bruising, things like that. So it's not a quick toxin. If your animal has had any kind of exposure, get them in ASAP.
All right. Not a bad way to end with a great bit of advice. Dr. Kimberly Earle, thank you so much as always.
Thank you.
And Cheryl Shaw, we'll catch you here next week as well.
Yes.
All right, that's Pet Chat run and done for today.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.